I remember the first time, it had been about 4 weeks, the first time they let me have a phone call with the satellite phone. We were about 110 miles from any town. So we had to use a satellite phone to talk to my parents. And they let me have a 5-minute conversation. And as soon as I heard their voices, I just broke down crying.
Oh, I bet. I can't
and Caroline,
imagine.
My little sister, went on the phone, and I just cried even more. But it was good. It was healthy because they were crying on the other end, too. They knew that I was making changes for the good.
Okay, welcome, everybody. This is Dr. John Duffy. Welcome to the podcast. We are going to continue our discussion here with Michael. And Michael kind of has walked us through some of the darker times in his life, and we're about to see the light. Welcome back, Mike.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
So during our little interlude here, in the break between these two podcasts, you and I were just talking about, I was just pointing out, like, the story you're telling about, like, you know, college kind of busting out for you, and there being kind of a lot of weed and drinking and just kind of checking out and that not working. This is not an unusual story, especially in the last few years. And I just kind of mentioned as an aside, it's always guys. Hardly ever am I working with a girl sitting across from me who's had that situation. You had a theory.
Yeah, well, I think it's a decent theory. It's probably been said before, but I think guys just have a really difficult time showing emotions. I think it's like an undercurrent of society that guys should be tough, manly, strong, should not cry.
Yep.
Yeah, and women are seen to be the opposite. They should be, they're weaker, they are more emotionally vulnerable, which we're all just people. There should be no difference, in my opinion. So, but it's a shame that it puts guys in difficult situations, I think. I think some people handle it better than others, but I think on the overall scale, that's kind of how it's looked.
I think you're right. I think it's been said before. I think you're right about that too. But I don't think that can be said often enough, because I think as guys, because we are not willing to be emotionally vulnerable, because we buy into what is this social norm, that there is no courage and vulnerability, that we are losing. You know, in a way, like, you know, we end up, college busts out, or, yeah. You know, we get depressed and we get kind of self-loathing, and we don't love our jobs. And, you know, like, even as people get older, I notice, like, women kind of, like, reinvent themselves and take care of each other and, you know, and talk to each other. And guys just kind of, I feel like they go on their isolated ways, with some exceptions. But by and large, you know, I think, you know, guys, by the time they're my age, often kind of know the end of their story and start in some degree of, like, depression and anxiety just starts to set in permanently. So I think, you know, your point is a really, really sound one and a critical one for guys to hear.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate.
Yeah. And let's hope it's changing.
It couldn't be further from the opposite is true, in that it takes courage to be vulnerable for guys. And that's a brave thing to do.
Yep.
That's how it should be looked at. It shouldn't be looked as a weak thing. It's bravery.
So with that in mind, take us to the next step in your story.
Yeah, perfect segue. So my parents pulled me out, and my brother had been sent to the wilderness, so I had a very good idea of where I was going.
And these wilderness is...
Yeah, wilderness, yeah, it's something we know about, because we talk about, but wilderness is a type of therapy. It's kind of like shock therapy, almost, in that you are sent to... There are various programs in the country, and probably in the world, but you're sent to... I was sent to Utah, the northern desert of Utah, to a group of adults like myself. Everyone has their problems in the group. Everyone had their problems in the group. But
and it's a therapeutic setting, right?
It's a therapeutic setting. So you have a therapist you meet with once a week. They give you goals. But you're sleeping outside. You're living outside. You're cooking your own food.
And you're in the middle of freaking nowhere, right?
You're in the middle of nowhere. And it was winter. It was in it's the high desert. So it's not what you guys are thinking. It is cold as hell. It was like probably on average negative 10 to negative 15 during the night for sleeping.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Zero to negative 15, somewhere around there.
And you were out there for a couple of months, correct?
70 days, 71 days, something like that.
71 days.
Yeah.
I did not realize it was that cold.
Oh,
how did
God.
You?
Well,
I mean,
we had negative 20 sleeping bags. We were well equipped. So it's an expensive venture to be sent on.
Mm-hmm.
I was lucky in that my parents had the means to have the means to send me
yep.
to the wilderness.
Right. Right. Good point.
And some people just so angry when they first get there. I just wanted to get going. I wanted to get going on therapy. I was like, let's do this. I'm ready to be fixed.
You're right. Part of the reason that these programs are as long as they are is they build in, I think, a lot of time on the front end to get people past their anger and, you know, through all the stages before they're willing to accept, like, oh yeah, I'm here. This is real.
Yeah. While it did take me a while to be just open and honest to my group, I was ready to go. I was ready to change.
Yeah.
And I think that gave me a step right as soon as I got there. That gave me a step above.
How did you know you were ready to change? I mean, that's a big step, right? Being willing to go to the high desert of, I mean, you have no idea what this is going to be like before you step on the, you know, get on the airplane, right?
Yeah, I had a little bit because my brother had been
sick. Oh, right, right,
so
right.
I knew a little bit about what I was going to go through.
And yet you were eager to do it anyway.
I was eager because I had seen what it did for my brother. He came out of it awesome. He lost a ton of weight.
Right.
I was about 240 when I went into the wilderness. And so, yeah, I came out 195.
Wow.
To give you an idea of how much I lost there. 70 days.
Man.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good crash diet right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's another reason why I'd like to go back. I dropped 20 pounds in a week. No, I don't know about that. But so, yeah, you go out there. You physically, it's challenging for a lot of people. I was better at that aspect. Emotionally is where I needed the work.
Right. All right. Right. So, so how did it work? How did it work and how did you work?
Yeah. So you set up your own tent, you have your own food bag, you talk about your feelings pretty much the entire day. So I'm trying to remember the correct sentence structure that you had to say when you were talking about your feelings. You would call a group. The whole group had to come together. You would call a group, and this is including staff. There are three or four staff that came out with us. Okay. Make sure we're safe.
Yep.
Yeah, they were expert wilderness people. And so everyone stands and listens, and you say, I'm feeling anxious and depressed, let's say. And I'm feeling this because I just got sent to the wilderness, and I don't know anybody here, and my family's mad at me. And, yeah, that's basically what you say. You try to explain your feelings.
Yeah.
And it's very structured, but it ends up helping you talk about your feelings a little better.
Was this difficult at first? I mean, was this something you had to really kind of hone and get used to?
At first, because you can check in. It's called checking in. I'm just remembering. I'm starting to remember the language again. It's been a while. But so you could check in at any point, and it doesn't have to be negative. You can check in about feeling happy. So for the first 2 weeks, all happy check-ins for me. So it would be after.
No surprise there, right?
Oh, no surprise there. So it would be after a hike, and I'd be like, I'm feeling energetic and happy because I just did this 7-mile hike and I was worried I wouldn't be able to physically do it.
Not disingenuous, right? I mean,
No, you
really did feel
happy,
like,
yeah,
enthused.
I was worried I wouldn't be able to handle it. I had been getting no exercise prior to that. So, but yeah. So a lot of them were happy at first. And then the therapy really kicks in.
Uh-huh.
And the therapist would make me tell vulnerability every day. So something that I wouldn't normally tell anybody. So that was my assignment for a week. That sucked. So I had to come out and I'm like, shit, what am I going to tell everybody today? It's like, oh, yeah. So there were a few weeks there that it was difficult.
Yeah.
But overall, I was happy because I knew I was getting better. I knew I was changing for the better. I was mastering some outdoor skills that I still have today. I can make fire with sticks and a rock.
That's cool unto itself,
cool,
right?
That's I learned to make fire multiple ways, which most people, nobody else could do other than some of the staff.
Yeah.
So I was really proud of my accomplishments out there.
Yep, yep.
Not only physically, but I started the mend with relationships, wrote long letters. I remember the first time, it had been about 4 weeks, the first time they let me have a phone call with the satellite phone. We were about 110 miles from any town. So
wow.
We had to use a satellite phone to talk to my parents. And they let me have a 5-minute conversation. And as soon as I heard their voices, I just broke down crying.
Oh, I bet. I can't.
And Caroline,
imagine.
My little sister, went on the phone, and I just cried even more. But it was good. It was healthy because they were crying on the other end too. They knew that I was making changes for the good, and yeah. I would not take back any of those moments. Those were healing moments.
I can tell.
I
can
tell. Difficult moments like that.
I can feel it now. That must have been amazing to hear those voices, right?
Yeah.
And I know your family and how supportive they are and how loving, you know, you are as a crew. And yeah. That's so cool. Take me back 30 seconds here. Those moments of vulnerability that you had to express to the group on it. Do you remember one? Do you have an example of something that?
Yeah, I do. You were trying to crack open the shell.
But Why wouldn't I?
Yeah, I do. Let's see. So I'll give you an example of two.
Okay.
So one of them was a little more surfacey.
Huh?
Which they don't want.
Right.
But they were happy enough because it was my second or third week. I remember the campsite. I remember every single campsite. I remember exactly where we were sleeping. I walked in and I was like, so I have a vulnerability. And so the group all got together and I was like, and then I just told them, talked for about a minute. And I was like, in high school, junior year, I tried out for the basketball team. And I had had surgery before to get into basketball shape,
right.
On my back, which I had broken in sophomore year. And I was trying really hard, training really hard, and I didn't make the team. And I was telling the group this, but I think it was because the coach didn't like my attitude. I think I was too jokey. I was joking around constantly. I was confident I was going to make the team. I think he wasn't a fan of that, I guess, but I wish I had been more serious during that. And it's still a vulnerability today. I mean, I'm still bitter about it, but it led to great things like being social chair. I wouldn't have run if I was on the basketball team. I wouldn't have had time.
Right.
So it led to great things.
So in a way you learned something from that coach, I assume, right? That there's an element of balance or something that you need to bring.
Oh, yeah. Seriousness.
You can take yourself seriously.
I didn't show that I was taking it seriously enough.
Yeah.
I had the talent, but I didn't have the attitude, apparently.
Yeah.
It sucks to admit that, but it's sometimes you get a wake-up call like that.
And sometimes a wake-up call has to be that loud, right? I mean, in order for it really to enact some kind of change, sometimes it has to feel a little devastating, you know? Like, otherwise, I don't know if we learn the lessons, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you get anything from it if it's not like, oh, man, like, that really was a crushing blow. And
yeah.
So I got to think about what happened there because I had the talent to make that team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So another vulnerability, which is a little more heart-wrenching, was regarding my grandfather, my mom's father, and his last year or so of life, and that we knew he had about a year. We knew he was trying to mend relationships. He had a little bit of struggle with alcohol toward the end. You know, he was trying to cope with the fact that he was going to die.
Right.
And which is, I can't imagine how hard it is. He went through all the 5 steps, but my vulnerability was that I really didn't spend time with him. Like I was too busy doing my own crap. I was too busy hanging out with my friends. I wanted to party. I didn't want to hang out with grandpa.
Right.
And I mean, it sucks to this day. Like I really wish I had spent more time with him. My little brother did. They golf together all the time. So he golfed with him quite a bit. But I really didn't give him enough time.
Yeah.
Which really sucks.
No, I can tell you that. I can tell it's a big regret.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's sticking to me, but I think it'll pay off in the end, that regret, because hopefully it'll help me with relationships. And I like to think it has.
Yeah.
I mean, family is the most important thing.
Yeah.
Friends
yeah.
and parties are great. Friends are great. Parties are overrated.
Right. Well, it depends on who you are, but I can tell like you like a discussion. You like a connection. Do you have to get to a point where you kind of like forgive yourself for that and, you know, like recognize, because I'm thinking like, well, you must have been what, 17, you know, I'm just thinking
17, 18.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, well, boy, I don't know many guys that age who would want to spend time with grandpa. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so if you were, you know, 25 and
yeah, I think I can forgive myself eventually, but not yet.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still upset about it to this day.
Yeah. No, I can tell.
Yeah. So
that must have been a big thing to share with that group out there, too. yeah, out in Utah.
Yeah, that was toward the end. I was getting a little better at it every day.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so eventually got out of wilderness. We'll move on to Arizona.
But before we do, let me ask, so this idea of, so it sounds like I want people to understand kind of what wilderness is about and for. This idea of being vulnerable and expressing your feelings, why do you think that's the method for getting better?
Well, I think there's two parts to their madness.
Yeah.
Controlled chaos. The first is just stripping you down and sending you out to the wilderness. It's shock. That's why I called it shock therapy earlier.
Yeah.
Because they send you out. Most of these people who go out there have had no wilderness experience whatsoever. So they're cold. They are clueless. They have no idea who anybody is. Nobody talks to you for the first 2 days. That's called earth phase. It's the worst phase. That's why I wanted to get going. I was just watching the group just like sitting by myself, couldn't talk, had to just sit in my own thoughts for the first 2 days, which could not have been more torturous.
For a guy who is as verbal a person as I've ever met.
I thrive on interaction. I was denied interaction.
It must have been really interesting to have to be introspective.
Yeah. It was. I had to write down my story and tell the whole group. That was the first thing I did before any of them talked to me. I just tell my story.
Right.
But so the first part, yeah, they want to break you down, but just like no phone, no nothing, just you in the wilderness and your group and food and water and feelings is what it comes down to.
Yep.
Which is nice. Put. I have way too much reliance now on my phone. I had to put it behind me so I wouldn't look at it during this session. It's ridiculous.
Right.
And so I remember the first month, I felt vibrations in my pocket in the wilderness, and my phone wasn't even there.
The phantom vibrations.
Phantom vibrations.
Man, yeah, that's right. So it must have been interesting to be free of that.
Yeah.
Were you kind of jonesing for like, I gotta look at Facebook or Twitter or something.
No, I really wasn't. I was nervous to look at my phone for the first time. My dad brought it with him when he picked me up from wilderness, and I remember the screen freaked me out. My eyes couldn't handle the screen. Too much stimuli.
Wow. Yeah.
They drove me in a car we were probably going 35 on these dirt roads to get out of the wilderness.
Yeah.
And I was freaking out because we were going so fast.
Wow, Michael.
I was like, we are flying. How fast are we going? She was like 35.
So that's one interesting thing that I think the vast majority of us, especially in this, you know, Western culture, never get a taste of is just being in silence and being in the middle of nowhere and not, you know, being away from tech, you know, completely.
It's a really wonderful thing.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, I can imagine that, like, looking at the phone, it's like, oh, hell no, I don't want anything to do with this. Like, trees, I want to hear birds. Yeah.
I want to hear the coyotes.
Yeah, coyotes, right.
Yeah, those things were like my friends. I mean, I never saw them, but every night they were howling. They were too scared to come near us.
Right.
But they were howling, and it was nice.
You want to hear the coyotes, man.
Yeah,
I liked
the coyotes. I was like, well, they're out there yipping and trying to catch some rabbits, but they're my friends.
That's cool.
Yeah, so the emotional aspect, it just helps you prepare you for the next step, which is usually a halfway house.
Almost
everybody goes to a halfway house.
So let's go to the halfway house.
Yeah, so it helps. I learned to talk about my feelings. I learned what feelings I was feeling, which is difficult, which is surprisingly difficult.
Right, for guys in particular, right?
Yeah.
So I always say, like, you know, the one thing that comes easy for guys is anger. I'm either angry or I'm happy, you know? And
black or white. Yeah.
Right, black or white. And normally, if we really analyze it, if we take a beat and analyze it, we rarely feel either of those. It's something in between.
Yeah, there's guilt, pride, shame, happiness, anxiousness. There's all kinds of...
You got it, man.
Yeah, I mean, you could rattle off a lot more back then, but yeah. And so it helps you, because then I went to this halfway house that was mostly focused on alcoholism.
Right.
And AA is centered a lot around feelings and talking about your feelings. And
I'm sorry to interrupt. Does that feel like the right fit to you? Did you feel at the time like, yes, that I'm an alcoholic and I need to kind of cure that disease or address that disease?
That's a good question. Was it the best place that I could have been sent? I'm not sure, honestly. I think somewhere focused more on education and school and schooling would have been a better fit. But I think I learned a lot, and I made great steps there still, with still fixing relationships, making new friends down there. Yep. And so I would not go back. I would not go back and trade to a different house, but I think there could have been a better fit.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, I'm here now today because of what I went through. So I like where I'm at.
Yep. Agreed. Okay.
So I'm not going to argue take that.
It. All right. Fair enough, man.
Yeah. So there was AA. I mean, I did 30 for 30 the first month. That you have to go to a meeting every single day.
Yep.
And it was interesting. I mean, I had to pick a sponsor and had to start doing the steps. And it was, the steps they work.
Yeah.
Anybody could work those steps and be a better person. It doesn't matter if you're an alcoholic. Everyone has something that they could work on. And AA has this, it has kind of a negative outlook from the outside. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, ooh, AA. They kind of, people cringe when they see it.
Absolutely.
But it saves lives. It has saved thousands and thousands of lives ever since. God, who was the guy that wrote that book? It was like 1930 when he wrote it.
Right. Bill W., right?
Yeah, Bill W. There you go. So it's really helped a lot of people. And the process works. It's all about making amends right there on the spot, talking about your feelings, learning who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Substance is a big part of it for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Alcohol and drugs. But for
but
somebody,
you're saying that's not critical. That's not the
everyone
most important
has something
thing.
They can work on.
Yeah.
And it's so to give you an example of how it's so good, let's see. Oh, so I'm gonna call my mom out on this one. But so we were sitting in a restaurant, and I was back in Hinsdale for a little bit, back home.
Yep.
But it's still in AA and doing that. And my mom looks at somebody walking into a restaurant, and she goes, "Oh, she's just the worst." And she interrupted me as I was talking about AA in that conversation. And I was like, okay, perfect example, Mom. I was like, this is how somebody going through AA would look at this situation. They would say, they wouldn't say, oh, she's the worst. They would say, what about me is making me think that way? You know what I mean?
It's such a big shift, man.
It's a big shift in thinking. So it's like, I'm like, so you may think she's the worst, but why do you think she's the worst? Are you resentful at her? Did she do something that you're haven't forgotten about? Have you not forgiven her for something? So it's a different shift in thinking. It's
right.
All about looking within.
Depth. There's a depth to it, right?
It's easy to blame on the outside, but it's inside that where it happens. You know what I mean?
Well, it must have been juicy to have that that teachable moment with your
perfect.
Mom.
Oh, it's perfect. I can tell you the table we were sitting at. Perfect.
I can imagine that you loved that.
Yeah. So, did AA, lived in Tucson, Arizona for about a year and a half.
And healing the whole time. You feel like you're
healing
emotionally
the whole time,
getting better,
sober
connecting.
The whole time.
Yep.
And, I stuck to it. There were a few times where I was like, I would like to have a beer. But I stuck with it. And I did not have a beer until I had the full support of family, friends, loved ones, cat.
Was that anxiety provoking at all? Like that first beer, you know, after...
No, it's kind of like a weight was lifted off my shoulders. I'm trying to go back to the feeling.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what table I was sitting at when I had that first beer.
No kidding. Wow.
Hinsdale Golf Club. So I was telling him, I was like, I think I want to try to be able to have a beer again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd gone on with the program. I wanted to get through this program, get back to the Midwest, back to everyone I love. And I didn't want to be in Tucson.
Yeah.
It's a good city. They have a great AA program down there. A lot of healing goes on down there, but I want it out.
Yep.
I need weather changes. It was all sun.
I can imagine.
I'm a pale person.
That's true.
I was having to seek out shelter far too often.
The SPF you must have needed out in Arizona, man.
Oh, yeah.
And I can imagine that you wanted to be with family and with Kat.
Yeah. All my friends. I mean, I made a lot of good friends there, but... all my best friends were in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And I'm a Midwest guy.
Yep. So you come back home.
Yeah. And I spent a summer exercising, being healthy, getting into school at DePaul University. And And at the end of the summer, it was probably like end of August, I had my first beer in, it's probably a year and 8 months.
Wow.
Year and 8 months.
And it was like, if it was good. This was not a bad experience. This wasn't a
foreboding
experience.
It wasn't anxiety provoking. I wasn't worried I was going to go insane and start go behind the bar and drink all the beers behind the bar and punch people. Or some people think that's what alcoholics are, but it's not like that.
Right.
And I wouldn't call myself an alcoholic, but yeah, I mean, that first beer was nice.
Yeah.
I was always worried about how to bring it up to them, how I wanted to do it. I didn't know how they'd react. And when
Your
I did,
parents.
When I brought it up, well, I brought it up to my parents a few times, and then I brought it up to the whole family. We were all sitting there, and I was like, I want your guys' blessing. I want you to feel okay with me having this first beer. And they were like, yeah, we're okay with it. And then I was like, okay, great. I'll probably have one maybe the next time we're all out for dinner. And my mom was like, no, just order one now.
Really?
Yeah.
That must, what a, so you are one of four kids. I'm just picturing this moment. Like, what a unique, beautiful family moment. So you have all five of your immediate family members with you.
I think they were all there.
That's amazing. That's a really, I mean.
It was really cool.
It just speaks to how, is that right?
Just as important.
Just as important family,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's really, really incredible. And that your family was supportive must have meant the world to you.
It did. It really did. It was really awesome to have that support.
Yeah.
It was nice. And I think they were definitely on board. I think they knew I was going to bring it up at some point too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the couple of years since then, how has life treated you? You know, and so, you know, what's happened since then, and what do you picture kind of looking forward?
Yeah, so life always has ups and downs. I mean, there haven't been drastic ups and downs like there were years ago, but
right.
I mean, every week something will come up and then I'll fix it and then I'm happy, you know, largely happy, which is good. That's all you can really ask for in life, right?
Absolutely.
You're with the people you love, and I have Kat. I have my friends moving in with Kat soon, so it's been great.
Yeah. And I was just I just recorded a podcast a little while ago about process versus outcome, and I think if we get too married to outcome, you know, I have to get this job or I have to get this grade or I have to, you know, then we miss, you know, how important the process is. And like, as long as we're moving, we're not, you know, in still water.
Yeah.
Life is good, you know, or life has potential to be good. Life is interesting. And, yeah. You know, but one thing I note about you is and tracking this story again, it kind of solidifies it. You're never in still water, man. You are always moving. That's, I'm sitting here thinking like, yeah, I never really worry about you because I always figure you're moving and you're progressing and you have this kind of inner tenacity to improve, always, you know, be your best self, you know? And that there's something kind of unique about that among men, I think, you know? And so I kind of really, I want you to know that I honor that in you. That's something that is, I think, a rather unique quality, but something you embody wholly.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a good compliment.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, well, I don't want this story to sound like a downer, you know, because in the end, you know, it's the story of kind of rebirth and, you know, the hero kind of wins in the end, right? I mean, you're a pretty happy guy sitting there now.
Hero.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, it's you're right. It is the process that makes it good. The best stories come from the process.
Yeah.
Like you have to, if you want a good story, do something you normally wouldn't do.
Right.
And I have a pretty good story because yeah, I messed up a lot, but I like that the fact that I had to go through all that.
Yeah.
It shows, I don't know what word to put. Badassery.
Maybe yeah.
On my part.
Badassery, man. Let's go with that.
I'm proud of it.
You are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. That's good. That's good, man. So where do we go from here? Where does life take you, do you think, going forward?
Well, like I said, moving in with Kat in just a couple weeks.
Congratulations. That's
thank
awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I still have struggles in life looking for a job. That's a struggle right now.
Yep.
But I've got all the help in the world, as much help as people can give me, which is awesome. I mean, it's so huge to have supportive family on that front.
Yep.
So... But yeah,
so you don't look worried. You don't look like you're concerned that that's going to happen for you.
No, even though we have agreed to eventually my parents are going to cut me off, and it's a daunting thought, but I'm confident that it will turn out for the best.
So, all right, one thing I'll challenge you with. You watch TED Talks?
I've watched some TED Talks.
All right, so let's say you got a room full of people. and you're not anxious and you have a couple of minutes, is there from this whole story, this whole arc of your life since you were, you know, a teenager, is there something you want people to know or something you've learned that you think everybody isn't getting that you would want to deliver as a message?
Oof. That is a bit of a challenging question. Mm-hmm. I think I've emphasized a few points throughout these two episodes here.
Yeah.
But largely, I would say the most important thing is that family is the most important thing.
That does feel like what's sitting underneath
that's
all
I think
of this.
That's
your
the
foundation.
Underlying, yeah, that's the underlying key to my success, I would say.
It's interesting, you know, I don't think we focus on that nearly enough. And there's something about you and your family that kind of brings that into like really, really clear focus, because you're so supportive of one another, and everybody's got their challenges, right? In your family,
always.
In my family, right? Everyone's got their challenges. And if you're...
Everyone's got their shit.
Right. Everyone's got their shit, right? And if you're there to support each other, you're going to carry each other through, you know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and it's kind of taking turns, right? It's like,
it
doesn't seem like the shit hits the fan all at once, which is
always some shit hitting. There's always a little bit of shit hitting the fan.
Good
but
luck
yeah,
with the
I
enemy.
Mean, everyone has a little bit of trouble. Everyone has trouble in the family occasionally, but it shows how awesome they really are.
Yeah.
And everyone's family has love. Everyone's family loves one another. And it shows how awesome, I'll brag about my family. They're
brag
amazing.
About your family.
They're truly an amazing family. And they will put me before themselves in a heartbeat. And I will do that for any of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that is kind of a lovely ending and a beautiful tribute from one of the best guys I know. So seriously, Mike.
Thank you, and I
really appreciate you being here. And come back and talk again.
I would love to.
All right.
This was a blast.
Thank you. You can find this podcast on iTunes, on WGN Plus, on Podbean. And I think a couple other places. I'll let you know. There is a free parenting video series on my website, drjohnduffy.com. If you have any thoughts, questions, comments about this website, or any thoughts about what you'd like to hear us talk about here, follow me on Facebook, Dr. John Duffy, and I will make sure that we address it. Have a great day. And again, I so appreciate your time. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.